Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday. It's March 18th, 27 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City under mostly sunny skies. We're reporting 27 degrees in Heber City as well. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Keyboy. Good morning.
Happy Monday to you, and also happy last day of winter because the vernal equinox is tomorrow. That'll be at 9:06 p.m. So today is the last full day of winter, but in the Wasatch back, it's going to be feeling like spring. So typically we should have temperatures in the 40s in Park City. Today we'll see a daytime high climb to 51 degrees under mostly sunny skies. Should be an absolutely beautiful day if you want to spend some time outside. And if you're going to be heading up to the mountain, we'll kind of feel like spring skiing for sure. Then as we move into tonight, we get mostly clear skies with the overnight lows generally falling into the upper 20s throughout the Wasatch back, but we might bottom out only around 30 degrees in Park City to kind of build off of that spring feel that we're going to have. And then tomorrow, as we officially move into the spring season, it's going to be slightly warmer than what we find today with a daytime high coming in at 53 degrees, mostly sunny skies. We have high pressure keeping our weather quiet in the northern half of the state. So what we get today really won't see too many drastic changes through at least the middle of the week, with highs ranging in the low to mid 50s in Park City, while we'll likely range in the mid to upper 50s down in the Heber Valley with overnight lows generally in the upper 20s and low 30s. And that continues through our Wednesday. As we move into the second half of this week, that's when we start to see some changes because the high pressure will start to move its way out of the way and we'll start to enter a more progressive weather pattern with moisture beginning to increase. So on Thursday, for the most part, it looks like we'll see mostly sunny skies, but there will be at least a slight chance that we could see a few showers. And with the daytime high 53 on Thursday, it's more likely than not that we would see rain down in Park City. That wet weather potential increases a little bit on Friday, so you can think of about a 1 in 5 or 20% chance on Thursday, roughly a 30% chance on Friday. Otherwise, we get partly cloudy sky with that daytime high holding steady in the low 50s. And then by Saturday and Sunday, that's when we start to see the big shakeup in our weather because forecast models are pretty optimistic that we'll see an upper level low pressure work its way in, dragging a cold front along with it. And that's going to result in a chance of scattered showers based on what I'm seeing at this point for both Saturday and Sunday. Saturday still likely going to be a mild day in the low 50s, but we'll drop the 30 degrees on Saturday night. And on Sunday, the daytime high might only top out in the 30s, which means we could see a chance of straight snow showers. So at the end of the day, should see some beautiful weather through the first half of this week, becoming slightly unsettled Thursday into Friday while still staying mild. Then we likely have a cold front arriving this weekend, Leslie.
Okay, Thomas, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And with a look in the backcountry and the fun with us from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, we've got Drew Hardesty. Good morning, Drew.
Hey, morning, Leslie. Wet avalanches, again, will be the main concern. Just moderate danger for wet avalanches. It's mostly a carbon copy of the last day or two. Just I think the primary thing is just don't overstay your welcome on the steep, sunny solar aspects. Once the snow becomes wet, unconsolidated, unsupportable, and just sort of choose your timing, your aspects, your locations wisely. I think if you're out there on the steep, sunny aspects in the early afternoon, you're too late. So again, spring, diurnal, avalanche conditions. Clyde avalanches also should be on people's radar, and the standard zones of Big Cottonwood Canyon and Stairs Gulch, Milby South, Broad's Fork, and then as always, Cornice has become more tender with heating and direct sun. But that's pretty much going to be the name of the game for most of the week until the pattern change arrives for late weekend.
Okay. Hey, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Heber City Manager Matt Brow. He'll preview Tuesday's City Council meeting. Later on, from Youth Sports Alliance, we've got Development Director Ashley Laxo and Programs Director Heather Sims with an update on the upcoming community thank you party and some after-season scholarships. And Snyderville Basin Recreation District Director Dana Jones in with her monthly update. Well, new bills that were passed this legislative session will affect Wasatch-backed businesses and the area's economy. KPCW's Christine Waller has more on that.
One bill affecting many businesses, hotels, and restaurants in the area covers the state's liquor laws. The new law increases the number of liquor licenses available over 7 years. During the webinar, Public and Government Affairs Strategist Des Barker said the Department of Alcoholic Beverage Services took action after it passed.
DABS immediately gave out all of their available liquor licenses in the last DABS meeting, knowing that by the time they met next, that they would have availability for their immediate needs on bar and restaurant licensee applications.
Barker estimates the bill would eventually provide more than 300 new restaurant licenses and over 100 bar licenses in the next 7 years. The new law will also allow hotel patrons to transport an unmarked alcoholic beverage between a licensed bar area inside of a hotel through convenience areas like hallways. But there are still some questions about how this will work in practice.
How do you keep having people move along to their next area without having to have constant staff there monitoring and creating risk for the licensee?
Another bill passed supports film production in Utah, providing $12 million to the Utah Film Commission annually for the next 2 years. Barker says rural parts of Utah and the Wasatch Back benefit because it could increase hotel stays and tourism. Legislation surrounding the transient room tax still needs clarity. TRT is a tax imposed by a county or city on lodging for stays less than 30 days. Barker says many counties want things other than hotel stays to be subject to TRT because they need more revenue to support areas affected by tourism, like public safety. Right now, one of the main ways counties accommodate revenue needs is increasing property taxes.
We have been at the table for many years trying to sort this out, and it continues to be a pressure cooker.
Governor Cox has until March 21st to pass or veto legislation from the 2024 session. He can also allow bills to become law without his signature. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
The Heber City Council meets on Tuesday, starting in work session at 4 o'clock at the Heber City Hall. On the phone now with a meeting preview is City Manager Matt Brower. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Leslie.
So during work session, the council will discuss the Wellberg annexation. This project stalled back in 2020 as the city was updating its general plan. Annexation of the property, we're talking about 300 acres next to Red Ledges, will require an update to the city's annexation policy plan. So it sounds like on Tuesday, you just want some direction, whether or not the council is even interested in proceeding with the annexation now?
Leslie, that's correct. We're going to kick the tires with council to see if they're interested in amending the city's annexation policy plan, as well as determining whether they want to go through the annexation process for this petition.
So the property has since been acquired by a new owner. Do they have a different idea of what they'd like to do with the property?
They do. The annexation petition submitted back in 2020 advocated, I think it was 40 units or so. There's a new owner. They're requesting 2 units, and they're also interested in partnering with the city to complete an important segment of the Red Ledges Trail that would run up on the east side of the Red Ledges property.
So why do they need to be in the city to build 2 homes?
I believe it's an issue of access. They want to use Red Ledges internal road network to gain access to their property. Otherwise, they'd be required to build a road from their units down to Center Street. And so I think it's economics, and I think they understand that Red Ledges roads would be a lot more economic for them.
Okay. So what's the thinking at this point?
Don't know. We'll kick the tires with the council for the first time on Tuesday and get a sense of whether they support the annexation petition or not.
Yeah, so do we have any idea what size homes they're talking about?
We have not seen anything specific, but based upon the size of the property, we're probably talking about large estate homes like you're seeing in built in Red Ledges currently.
Okay, and then what needs to happen to finish that trail easement there for the Eastern Red Ledges Trail?
Well, that trail segment actually runs up on property that Red Ledges does not own. That's why it has yet to be completed. If this were to be annexed, a condition of the annexation would require them to provide an easement to complete that trail. And this is an important element of the trail network because it allows us to link into the Coyote Trail Network that's over on the north side of Red Ledges.
All right. Also on the work session agenda, Councilmember Scott Phillips requested that the city consider setting up a program to help senior citizens pay their utility bills. What's he proposing?
He is proposing leveraging the same plan that the state uses when providing abatements for property tax. We'd use the same criteria in establishing qualifications for the abatement of utility fees. Again, we're looking at trying to kick the tires with council this afternoon or tomorrow afternoon to see if there's interest in supporting such a program.
So what utilities are we talking about? All of them?
Yes, we're talking about 4 utilities the city provides: water, sewer, stormwater, and pressurized irrigation. And the criteria that the state has set up is that you have to own your home, you have to reside in the home, you have to be, I think, 66 years of age or older and have a certain income. And if you meet those requirements, if the city should adopt this abatement program, you would probably comply with the program the council is considering.
Any idea how much this would cost the city every year to take it on?
It depends upon the criteria that would ultimately be established. Staff did run a scenario within the staff report, capping the utilities at $80 or $85 a month. The city would have to determine how they would cover that cost, whether it be absorbed within those respective enterprise funds, whether it be subsidized with the general fund, whether it just be written off. We don't have those answers yet and hope to have that conversation with council on Tuesday.
Okay. And then how big do you think of an issue is the rising cost of living for older folks in Heber?
Well, I think it's becoming a big issue for everyone. I go to Smith's and look at the cereal aisle and I'm paying $9 for a box of cereal. It's becoming a big issue for everyone. And so the seniors who are on a fixed income and are seeing rate increases along with general inflationary increases becoming harder and harder to make ends meet on a monthly basis. So I think Scott's wanting to do a reasonable program that would provide some amount of relief without overburdening the enterprise funds.
All right. And any idea in terms of number of households that you might be helping?
My staff has researched the number of Heber residents that currently qualify for the property tax abatement program. And currently it's just under 80 people. So the people that qualify are around 80 right now.
Okay. Let's get an update on the Eastern Bypass. This is not the same as UDOT's Western Bypass. Heber City Council expected to award a contract to construct a roundabout on Mill Road for this bypass. The city had to use eminent domain, my understanding, to acquire the property that they needed. So did this slow down the project?
Correction, Leslie, we thought we would have to use eminent domain, but we were able to negotiate deals with both property owners without going through that process. And so we're pleased that we were able to reach a deal with both those property owners. It has not slowed down the process as we've been able to put out to bid the work for the roundabout on Mill Street. That work should take place, we believe, beginning in either April or May. And so we're pretty excited to get that important element of the Eastern Bypass completed.
And when will that be completed there, the entire road?
The entire road should be completed, we hope, before the end of June this year. Segment A, which goes from Highway 40 up to 550 East, is completed, other than the new signalized intersection on Highway 40. Mm-hmm. Section B, we got delayed because we lost the weather last fall. We can only pave when temperatures are 55 degrees and rising, and we lost that temperature threshold. And so we hope to gain that back here in the next month or so to complete that paving. And Section C was completed last fall as well. So we're simply waiting on paving Section B and doing the roundabout on Mill Street.
Okay. So again, this would take people, I guess, who would use this bypass? And it would take them from where to where? You said Highway 40 to where?
Yeah, it would take it from Center Street over to Highway 40. So I imagine anyone that lives in the southeastern part of the county would use this roadway.
Okay. Let's see, construction is also set to begin soon on a band shell located on 200 South. This is part of the Envision Heber changes to downtown. Will any of the changes be complete in time for summer events this summer?
Not this summer, but most definitely next summer, summer of 25. The City Council will consider a contract with Maddox Construction to complete the band shell, as well as the improvements to 200 South, turning it into essentially a festival street. We're told that if council awards the contract tomorrow, work will start on the 200 South Festival Street and the band shell in April, early May timeframe. We received a $600,000 grant to complete the band shell, and that grant requires us to have it done before early fall. So we hope that will be done by early fall, and the Festival Street will be shortly thereafter.
All right, so that low bid with Maddox Construction is $2.7 million. The next closest bid is $4 million. So I'm guessing, how did they do this for $1.3 million less? And does that make you nervous?
They did leave $1.3 million on the table, and my staff has done a fair amount of research and due diligence to verify that Maddox is qualified and capable of completing the work under the bid that they've submitted. Staff has completed that, and they feel confident that Maddox can do it. And we have to believe in the process and hope that they can actually complete it without a lot of change orders.
Okay. You're not obligated, however, to take the lowest bid, or are you?
We're required to take the lowest, most responsive bid. But if we don't take the lowest responsive bid, we have to have findings as to why we didn't do that. Our research is indicating that they can complete the work under the bid they've submitted, and so we need to look at awarding the contract to them.
Okay. Finally, I wanted to ask about the Community Reinvestment Agency the council will be discussing. The city's working to get other local entities on board with this tax increment funding plan. What's the latest here with getting Wasatch County and the Wasatch County School Board?
The Heber City Council met with the Wasatch County Council about 2 weeks ago and made a formal request that the county support an interlocal agreement establishing the increment with the county. And we hope to approach the Wasatch County School Board on April 23rd to make a similar appeal to them as well. It's critical that we get interlocal agreements with both the school board and the county council in order to generate the increment needed to make the investment hope to achieve downtown.
And what's your sense then with the school board? They've got some expensive projects that they're building. Don't they need the money themselves?
They do. We believe that if the school board will support the tax increment, they will generate more revenue both in the short term and in the long term. And so it would be a benefit to them and to the county should they support the overall interlocal agreements.
And you say that because you're going to build what with that financing that would increase, the assessed valuation?
We're going to invest it in the downtown. We're going to invest in the downtown into purchasing property for parking, for amenities. We're going to hopefully get the private sectors to also invest in the downtown. And these investments are going to generate additional tax revenues for both the county and the school board. And oh, by the way, when the CRA's life sunsets in 20 years, the county and the school board would receive 100% of their proportional tax increment. So economically, they win on the short game and on the long game as well.
Well, school boards, though, are funded by property tax, not by sales tax.
I'm talking property tax, so the increment would be property tax that's generated.
Okay, but parking, this is what I guess I don't understand. I mean, how would a parking lot improve taxes for the school district?
Right now, one of the biggest hindrances to private investment is meeting the city's parking requirements. So if you had a property owner, for example, we have the Ideal Theater in downtown Heber, just purchased by an investor. He's trying to invest money into that building, but he doesn't have the resources necessary to buy land to meet the city's parking requirements. And so the city's stepping up and saying, hey, we will, by way of an economic development investment, provide the parking for the downtown businesses. This should in turn offer private investment to follow for private investors to make the additional investments in their properties. That in turn is going to increase the valuation, and that in turn is going to create more tax revenues for the taxing entities.
All right. Now, is the city considering a parking garage where you would actually build some significant parking, or are we just talking surface parking?
Initially, it will be surface parking. It's going to be located on the corner of Midway Lane and 100 West. It would be surface parking. The city is trying to purchase the old fire station building and Heber Light Power's administration building. We initially do surface parking, and as time warranted and demand warranted, we look maybe to do a parking structure.
All right. What are we talking about in terms of number of spots?
Initially, we'd be able to provide about 130 additional parking spots with the two parcels of land I mentioned.
Okay. All right. Anything else, Matt, you want to mention?
Maybe just get excited about the 26th season of the Heber Market on Main. That will be kicking off in June of this year. Heber Market on Main has become just an amazing local event. And by all your listeners, to stay tuned for the announcement of the bands that will be made next month or two.
Okay. Matt, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
Matt Brower is the Heber City Manager. Well, Vail Resorts denies fault in a lawsuit alleging negligence after a 10-year-old girl fell 30 feet from a Park City Mountain chairlift. A family filed a lawsuit against Vail back in February. According to the lawsuit, a 10-year-old girl boarded the Iron Mountain Express lift at Canyons Village on December 16th of 2020 with three friends. However, she slipped from her seat and was dangling from the chairlift for some 300 yards before falling 30 feet. The girl's father was on the chair behind her. He jumped off the lift after his daughter as he feared for her safety. According to the suit, both the girl and father sustained serious injuries. The lawsuit states only one employee was operating the chairlift and alleges Vail, which owns Park City Mountain, was negligent and didn't properly train and supervise employees. Now Vail has filed a response to the lawsuit stating the complaint should be dismissed as the family did not state a claim upon which relief can be granted. Further, Vail denies ownership or operation of Park City Mountain and states that VRCPC Holdings Incorporated should be the defendant. The response also alleges express and implied waiver, assumption of risk doctrines, and Utah's inherent risk of skiing statute bar Vail from fault. The case is scheduled to go to trial in May of 2025. In the studio now with an update from Youth Sports Alliance, I have Development Director Ashley Laskell and Programs Director Heather Sims. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Ashley, let's start with the Deer Valley Land Rover handover and reveal. It sounds like you do have the new vehicle, huh?
Yes, we do have the vehicle. This past Thursday, we received the new Defender 130 from Land Rover in Lehigh that we won through the Land Rover Defender Service Awards.
Okay. How big of a deal was that?
It was a great event. The dealership put on a wonderful handover event for us. Olympian and ski legend Lindsey Vonn was on hand to help with the big reveal, as well as Joe Eberhardt, the president and CEO of Jaguar Land Rover North America. Joe handed the keys over to Heather Sims, and she drove the car off the showroom floor.
Oh, nice.
It was very fun.
You scored.
Yes, yeah. It was. Yeah, it was my new ride home.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the car.
Well, it is an 8-passenger, so for us it means that we can potentially take 6 kids in the car because we need another adult. It has all the things that we need. It's got a tow hitch, so we can potentially bring a trailer and bikes to the trailhead. And it's just a fantastic opportunity that Land Rover North America gave us. And, you know, thanks to the community for voting for us.
All right. So where does it get parked?
Well, it will be, you'll see it on the streets of Park City. It will be moving around, as Heather said, to programs, and we'll use it for sort of other events that we need transportation. But the biggest thing is getting kids and gear to trailheads and programs and help relieve some of the transportation that we have to supplement in order to provide that for programs.
Okay, and then just remind us, I mean, this is... You guys have it because of the community that voted for Youth Sports Alliance. Tell us about that.
Correct. And we have an event that we would love to invite the public to. We have a reveal event to the Park City community scheduled at Deer Valley on Thursday, March 28th at the Snow Park Lodge from 3 to 5 p.m. We're really excited to share this afternoon with the community to have everyone come check out the new Defender and as a way for us to just thank the community for rallying behind us, for participating in everything, and for voting for us. So that's a way for us to share it back.
Okay. And again, that was like a secret ballot. We'll never find out how many people voted.
We will not. Emily and I have asked and asked, but they keep those numbers to themselves. But it really has been an amazing experience. We were nominated last June, and the whole process of making a video, submitting it, finding out that we were in the top two, and then finding out that we won in November. It's really been a long journey, but it's just been so rewarding, and we've appreciated the community support so much.
Well, what's interesting, I've yet to receive, as soon as I speak about it, I'm sure it'll happen, but my phone's sitting right here, but I haven't received one email. right, from Land Rover, which is kind of refreshing, right?
Yes.
That I'm not bombarded with spam now.
Yes. I mean, I think it was a wonderful campaign for them. It was their biggest one. It was the third Defender Service Awards that they've done. But I'm glad to hear that that hasn't been the case.
All right. You also wanted to know, wanted to let athletes and their families know that you have some postseason scholarships available.
Yes, we do. So athletes who train with one of the seven Park City-based winter sports clubs are eligible for need-based financial assistance from YSA's Stein Erickson Endowment to help pay for training, travel, and competitions. So just to remind everyone, those partner clubs are Figure Skating Club of Park City, Park City Ice Miners, Park City Ski and Snowboard, Park City Speed Skating Club, Wasatch Freestyle Foundation, Wasatch Luge, and the UOP Bobsled and Skeleton. So right now, the application period is open for scholarships to help athletes attend postseason competitions for which they've qualified during their seasons. So these are invitation-only camps that are sponsored by national governing bodies.
Okay.
So those applications are due Monday, April 1st.
All right, and how do people apply?
They can find more information out on our website, ysausa.org/programs/scholarships.
Okay. How much, any idea how much you give away in those scholarships?
This is a smaller round of funding for us. So we do set some funding aside just to cover these end of the season expenses that athletes and families may not have planned for when they submit their sort of funding requests in the start of the season.
Sure. Okay, and Heather, what's happening on the programs front?
So today is our last day of winter programs, actually, with North Summit and Wasatch at Woodward. This is our first time working with North Summit, which we sold out, and we're very excited to have them on board. And then our programs are open for the rest of the spring. We have another North Summit program, which is for the older kids, and it's another indoor, it's an indoor Woodward class. And then for Wasatch and for Park City and South Summit, we always have our mountain biking, which is one of our most popular spring activities. Ice skating, golf, sailing, some climbing, some art classes, some photography, hopefully you'll start to see our new Land Rover driving some of these kids to sailing and mountain biking trails. So we're excited about that. We also offer scholarships for kids who are on the free and reduced lunch program. And then we have a second tier of scholarships for kids that earn, families that earn $120,000 a year or less. And they just have to apply online at ysausa.org.
Okay, and then again, people can see different school districts, all of the different classes offered.
Yes.
For
yep.
Different ages.
Yep.
Okay.
That's it.
All right, anything else?
No, we look forward to seeing as many of you as possible at Deer Valley on March 28th. There'll be cookies, hot chocolate, a cash beer bar, and most importantly, our new Defender will be there at the Snow Park Plaza.
Okay, riding it right up.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
okay.
And we thank Deer Valley for joining us in that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Park City will have a new learner-driven school for students ages 6 to 11 this coming fall. KPCW's Christine Wooler has more about that.
Acton Academy Park City opens in August 2024, becoming the ninth Acton Academy in Utah. School officials say the institution takes a new approach to student learning with mixed-age classrooms and is fully learner-driven.
What that means is that for core skills like reading, writing, and math, the learners go at their own pace. We utilize all different types of adaptive learning technologies to facilitate that.
That's Chelsea Parisi. She and her husband, Tom Parisi, co-founded Acton Academy Park City because their two sons attended an Acton Academy in Texas and loved it. Chelsea says having self-paced learning means there won't be any tests or set reading lists for students. Each day will have time set aside for core skills like reading, writing, and math. But the students get to decide when they work on each skill.
They have kind of big goals for the year, and then they have to learn how to manage their time in order to achieve those goals.
Tom says this method taught their son time management. He earned free time when he progressed towards his goals and lost free time when he needed to catch up on work. Tom says it started to balance out, and their son learned how to set boundaries for himself.
They're learning from a very early age how to optimize their learning experience, and we're letting them fail. We're letting them say, hey, this week they didn't get a lot done. Why didn't you get a lot done? What can we do better next week?
The students use adaptive learning technology to gain skills, which Tom says is a, quote, gamified fun experience. As students advance, they earn badges, and if they're struggling, Tom says the technology recognizes it and will help them work on a topic until they understand it.
It's more of like 100% comprehension versus more traditional models, which is, you know, more of like you have to get a passing grade of 65 or better.
Group work and hands-on projects are also integral parts of the program. Chelsea says the students create their own culture in the classroom.
They, together as a group, come up with a set of rules that they want to follow, and then they hold each other accountable.
The school schedule is a departure from the traditional educational calendar. Acton schools have 6 weeks of classes and 1 week off, which means the summer break would only be 6 weeks. Tuition at Acton Park City would cost about $1,500 per month, totaling $16,500 for the year. The Parisi family is working to secure a permanent location for the school. They want an area where the children can go on outdoor adventures and space for 12 to 15 students to start. They hope to eventually accommodate up to 150 students, offering classes from preschool through 12th grade. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from Basin Rec, I have District Director Dana Jones. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start with summer camp. Registration underway?
Well, all of the camps have been posted on our website, so parents can go on there, kind of plan their summer out. If there are certain camps that they want, they can decide what they want, what weeks they want, you know, for their kids for the summer. We wanted to put it all up, you know, a little bit in advance so people do have that time to plan, because on April 10th at 6 a.m. is when the registration opens. And that is, that's a free-for-all. Some of the camps fill up immediately. So that's why we want to give people that opportunity to kind of look and see what they want to do. According to our board chair, Brandy, she says you got to get on a little bit before and just keep hitting redial. refresh. It was refresh because it's a website. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of first come, first serve? Or do you,
yes.
Do you allow maybe Basin residents first say?
We don't. I know Park City has moved to that, where they give their residents a little bit of a lead time on registering. We have not had to go to that extreme at this point. And most people are able to get what they need, as long as you don't wait. You don't wait till April 11th.
Okay. I mean, are you expanding it at all, or are you adding?
We are. We've added a number of camps for this year, so we've expanded our programs and our offerings. So we're just really excited for another summer season.
Any idea how many kids that you take each week?
Oh, wow. It would be hundreds each week are going to be going to everything from, you know, just our regular day camp to our adventure camps that go all over the place doing really cool stuff, to cooking and wildlife, and you name it, you can probably find something on there.
Okay. You're also, you and the board, also looking at some amendments to policies. Tell us about this.
We are. Our board actually approved them at our board meeting last week. Now, County Council has the final say on them, so our board approved them to go to County Council for final approval. So we are, one of the things we're doing is kind of, we have three different policy manuals. We're condensing them into two to make it a little bit easier. The problem was that every time we made a policy change, we wouldn't look at the whole document, so it's kind of a mishmash right now, and sometimes things are in two different places or you can't find it because it's in a very strange place. So we're really trying to clean that up. We're going to make a couple of key policy changes, one of them being to our cancellation and refund policy, and we did need to get that done before the April 10th when people are registering for camps.
All right. Why not just get it to one manual? I mean, why even have two manuals?
Oh, that would be nice, but one of them has to do with governance and finance. So most of that is state laws and rules and things that we have to follow, and the governance part has to do with our board and how our board works and what they're responsible for. So those kind of has their own, and we're putting personnel and operations into one.
Okay, and then tell me about the cancellation and refund policy.
We are actually, we were having some issues with it. The language in it wasn't terribly clear about what it can do. So we do have a new cancellation refund policy. If you register for something like a camp, you can get 100% refund if you cancel, as long as you do it at least a week before, at least 7 days before. So we tweaked that just a little bit. We used to also allow 80% after a certain number of days, and it just got super confusing for our staff. So we're going to a flat 7 days before, and that's pretty liberal, actually. And there's no, I like a lot of the stores now, they have restocking fees. We have no restocking fee on our cancellation. So basically, if you register for a program or a camp, you can get 100% refund as long as you cancel it at least 7 days before the start.
Okay, and you think that's enough time to give your staff then to kind of replace that opening?
That is what they tell me. We really took direction from them on this one. We said, what is going to make it easier for you? And I said, are you sure? Because that didn't seem like very much time, but they seem to be pretty confident with that. And they're very sensitive to the community. They don't want to make it difficult for the community.
Okay. You are working on a new website that you're going to, what, unveil shortly?
Well, we just, at our board meeting last week, got approval for, we did an RFP, a request for proposals for a company to redo our website. We got 15, I believe, proposals, and we went through all of them. We selected the top vendor, and we got approval from our board. So we're going to be starting that process. We're not actually going to do the full changeover until fall, because we want to get through the summer, and we want people to not have to deal with, how do I register for a camp on a new website in the middle of our busy season. So,
all right. So what changes do you hope to make to the website?
You know, it's interesting. We did a survey before we put out the RFP because we wanted to know what people thought of our website. And it was not very positive. a very high percentage said they frequently can't find what they're looking for, and sometimes they never find it. So we just want to make it more user-friendly and more easy to find the things that we're doing in the programs and how to sign up and all that kind of stuff. Because Basin really does a huge... just a huge variety of different things. And I want to invite the community to come to our Basin Showcase on April 6th. It's going to be at the Field House, and it's free. So come on down, and we're going to showcase everything that we do. From you could go to a free class. You can learn about our trails. You can learn about our Junior Ranger program. So we are going to be having that on April 6th from 9 to 12. So come down to the Field House and come on and see what Basin actually does.
All right. Your app works really well. You happy with that?
Yes. And that's funny you mentioned that, because the company that we are working with is actually going to be making some changes. And so they assure us that it's going to be a very smooth transition. We're a little skeptical, but some of our users at least will need to download an update. I think by the end of this month is when that's going to happen. And we don't want to get too far ahead of it, because you really can't do anything until they do it. But we're hopeful that it'll be smooth. And if it's not, just come on in, and our front desk staff at the Field House, I'm sure, will be glad to help you out.
Okay. You've also coming up for Easter an egg scramble and hunt at Matt New Park. Tell me about that.
We do. We do this one every year. It's free to the community. We buy thousands of plastic eggs stuffed with candy and little prizes. And we scatter them throughout the field at Matt Noop. So that's going to be happening on March 30th at 12 o'clock. 12 o'clock sharp, because I'll tell you, even though there's thousands of eggs out there, when the kids enter in mass, it disappears really fast.
Okay. Is there an age limit on this?
They usually break it up into two, where they keep the littler kids and the bigger kids separate and give them different areas, just so the little kids don't get trampled.
Okay. And then talk to me a little about what's going on with the kind of a spring changeover here from, winter to spring.
You know, we're going to continue grooming as long as we can. The weather's a little challenging when it's really warm like this. It gets soft and it melts, and then it freezes and hardens, and then we might get a little more snow. So we're going to continue as long as we can with our grooming operations, but they are starting to because they don't need as much equipment right now, there's not as much grooming. They're starting to bring the stuff in and, you know, clean it up and get it ready to store the winter stuff and bring out the spring stuff, because we already have a lot of our stakeholders that want to use the turf fields that melt first. And so they want to be out there practicing because there is definitely a field shortage in the area. It's funny because they're out there practicing and it is cold, but the snow has melted on the field, so...
Okay, and I know that you've talked already on the air about the e-bike survey, but another reminder that people can fill that out until when?
We're going to run it till the end of the month. We have had a tremendous number of responses. Even we had, I think I was on last week with Heinrich, and within 48 hours after we were on the radio and we posted the online survey, we had over 400 responses. So it's a very passionate subject. People can either go to our social media to find it. They can also go to the basinrecreation.org webpage, and it's at the top, on the rotating top piece. You can click on there and go ahead and give us your opinions on e-bikes.
Yeah. Have you seen any of the responses at this point?
They are not, our vendor is not sharing with us specific responses, just the number of responses. And between the mail-out survey and the online stuff, we probably are reaching close to, I'm going to guess, 1,500 already.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to mention?
Also go to our webpage because we have a new section on volunteer opportunities. So we have gone into this volunteer website where we can sign people up and you can see what kind of cool things you could be doing with Basin and sign up for them right there on our website.
Okay, Dana, thanks. Dana Jones is the executive director of the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District. Well, Utah's most expensive home is back on the market again, and it's in Park City. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the founder of Rockstar Energy Drinks is selling his Colony Mansion for $52 million.
Billionaire Russell Wiener bought the 17,500-square-foot house while it was under construction in 2022. Engel & Völkers has listed the 6-bed, 11-bath property, which has been on and off the market since the Rockstar Incorporated founder initially listed it last February. The price has rocketed. The Salt Lake Tribune reported Wiener bought it for nearly $40 million and listed it for $50. Now he's asking $52. And what does that buy? The new owner can enjoy a bowling alley, indoor multi-sport court, climbing wall, and a golf simulator. There's a built-in wellness spa with an indoor-outdoor lap pool, hot tub, cold plunge pool, gym, massage room, infrared sauna, Turkish steam bath, and Himalayan salt room. The home boasts technology that calibrates air quality, filters pathogens, and regulates lights according to residents' circadian rhythms. The exterior is mostly Croatian limestone. The roof is copper, and the windows are Italian steel. The property is also ski in, ski out, located near the top of Flatiron Lift and Bugle Ridge Bypass Trail. It includes a panoramic observation room reminiscent of a fire lookout tower. Wiener founded Rockstar in 2001 and sold it to PepsiCo in 2020 for more than $4 billion. Forbes estimates his current net worth is $5.2 billion. He previously ran for a California State Assembly seat. Now he lives primarily in Delray Beach, Florida. Wiener's father is far-right radio personality Michael Savage. Together, they founded the right-wing Paul Revere Society. According to the Wall Street Journal, Wiener has bought and sold luxury properties in Utah, Florida, California, and Colorado since selling Rockstar to Pepsi. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, Park City's annual Leadership Forum returns tonight with a focus on the future of mountain towns. Leadership Park City founder and director Miles Redeman will moderate the panel at the library, which features 5 representatives from Park City and sister communities, including Aspen and Sun Valley.
They've all lived the life in these resort communities and been involved, totally involved in these communities. And I'll be asking them questions about where they came from, how they saw their communities evolve, how they're dealing with some of their issues.
The panel will include journalist and author Paul Anderson of Aspen, Park City lodging owner Rhonda Sedaris, and Jonathan Schechter of the Jackson Town Council. Redeman said he wants to see how other towns are tackling the same problems as Park City, like traffic, childcare, and affordable housing. Again, the event is free. It's happening from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Santee Auditorium at the Park City Library. No registration is required. Well, the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Hall of Fame will welcome new inductees at a ceremony in Wasatch County next week. KPCW's Christine Willer has more on that.
Since 1956, the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Hall of Fame has operated out of Ishpeming, Michigan, the birthplace of organized skiing in the U.S. Executive Director Justin Kosky says the organization has inducted more than 480 people over the years, many with ties to Park City. The organization honors athletes as well as those who have positively impacted skiing and snowboarding.
On the athlete side, they have to have had World Cup podiums and Olympic appearances and Olympic placement that they've been able to achieve. And then on the builder side, you know, like athletes, they have to have made a significant impact on the sport of skiing and snowboarding.
This year, it will honor class of 2023 inductees, including world-class speed skier Ross Anderson, two-time Olympic medalist Shannon Barkey, Olympic gold medalist Billy DeMong, Powder magazine founders Jake and Dave Moe, ski innovator Les Auden, influential ski educator Mike Porter, and ski entrepreneur Hank Kashiwa. Kosky says Barkey is from North Lake Tahoe and DeMong is from Lake Placid, but both have called Park City home.
Both have built their careers in this community in Park City, raised their families there.
Black Rock Mountain Resort will host the ceremony in Heber Saturday evening. Events begin Wednesday, March 20th, with a welcome party at the Alf Engen Museum. Details are available at kpcw.org. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, following a slower holiday season, hotel bookings for the rest of the winter are outpacing last year. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more about that.
Park City Chamber of Commerce CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff said sales, restaurant, recreation, and hotel taxes were all down between 3-7% in December.
So our lodging industry definitely felt the brunt of that late snow and also Christmas falling on that Wednesday, which impacted travel.
Despite the slow period, Wesselhoff said visitation picked up in February.
Average daily rates on those hotel rooms are leveling out. And March, April, and May are all looking really, really strong. So we're very excited.
According to the Chamber's occupancy report analyzing 21 lodging properties, bookings for the end of March are ahead of last winter by 10% most days. Park City Manager Matt Dias said their forecast also predicts a strong end to the winter season. But Dias expects the season's slow start to affect tax revenue and the city's upcoming budget process.
So we're cautiously optimistic, but we are looking at the tea leaves here. And hey, this is going to constrain next year's budgetary measures. We have a myriad of inflationary measures for, you know, chlorine for the pools and lifeguard uniforms and things like that that we're going to have to pay for. And those costs are all going up, the cost of gasoline and otherwise. And so it's clearly going to be a tighter budget process this year.
Park City's fiscal year begins in July. A draft budget is typically presented in May with final approval in June. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And as the Heber Valley moves into spring, the Chamber of Commerce says that winter tourism is on par with last year. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has details about that.
About 80,000 visitors came to the Valley for events in December, January, and February, including the International Biathlon Union World Cup at Soldier Hollow and the annual ski drawing competition at the Wasatch County Event Center. Heber Valley Chamber Executive Director Don Kocher says events around the Valley made for a successful winter tourism season, but numbers haven't gone much above what's typical. There was a 3% increase in visits compared to last winter. Kocher says there could be a mix of reasons for the flat numbers.
During COVID, you heard the term revenge travel, right? So maybe that stuff is starting to subside and demand is starting to normalize again.
He also cited inflation making a dent in people's leisure spending. Kocher says summer is usually a busier season than winter for travel to the Heber Valley.
You can't get on Main Street in Heber without passing five or six trucks with trailers on going up camping.
However, that could change as Deer Valley expands and Wasatch County works to capture skier crowds. Kocher says the Chamber is planning how to attract more tourism to the Valley when the expanded resort opens in the 2025-26 winter season.
What we're looking at is trying how can we better position the Heber Valley to be a alternative destination or that cute hometown feel that people want to see after they go to the ski slopes and enjoy their time up on the mountain.
That's Dallin Kosher with the Heber Valley Chamber.